gets doubled. He's going to drive the lane, crosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three.
No, it's
good.
She got it.
Katie Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. Anthony Ferretti, Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer with you. Now, we would usually be coming to you live from the station, but these first couple segments is a little bit different as we encountered a problem earlier this week.
Yeah, it's been rough, but we're trying to keep the station COVID-free, and so for that reason, I have stepped out of the station. So luckily the other two hosts were gracious enough to let me come on for the first couple segments and record over Zoom. We've got some experience doing it because we did it for the first 4 weeks of the show. So I don't anticipate too many hiccups or anything like that.
We're just happy we still get to have you on the show, Joey.
Hey, and I appreciate
for the first half.
Thank you so much, Leo. Not everybody can see me right now, but I'm wearing a ballin' shirt with some tiger stripes on it. Quarantine has me going absolutely nuts. And so I'm just excited to talk to actual, like, real people instead of, you know, the Uber Eats guy or the Instacart guy. So this should be fun. This should be a good time.
Oh my goodness.
Joey Exotic Dwyer here with the tiger.
I do. I really do have some Joe Exotic vibes going on right now. I appreciate the acknowledgement.
Joey Exotic. I see what you did there.
I just need like the Scott Rosala frosted tips and I'll be there.
Oh my goodness. Oh, that's the complete package right there. But we got a great show planned for you guys tonight. First half's going to be hitting the hardwood. We're going to talk some basketball, and then the last half of the show is going to be on the gridiron talking football. So let's get right into it. The NBA Finals concluded over the weekend on Sunday. The Los Angeles Lakers beat the Miami Heat to claim their 17th title in franchise history. No surprise, LeBron James getting the MVP.
And you know, I've said it a million times before on the podcast, and I'm a little bit of a LeBron hater. Like, I recognize the greatness, obviously. But I don't know. I just thought Anthony Davis performed so well for the Lakers in that series. It was really AD's team, especially through the first two games. He was absolutely unstoppable. But yeah, obviously they're going to pick LeBron, and, that's just the way it goes, I guess. And I do want to throw some respect on the Heat, bringing it out to six games, even though they were banged up. Jimmy Butler really proved that he is an elite player in this league and that he can hopefully lead a team to a title. And it'll probably be this Miami Heat team with all the young talent they've got around him.
Yeah, my thing with LeBron James winning MVP is I kind of get it just because he created such a matchup nightmare. He basically allowed Anthony Davis to go off because we've seen when Davis is the one option on his own team that he can still be a dominant player but can't maybe carry them as far as he was able to with the Lakers. So just the fact that he had LeBron in the lineup with him just gave Davis kind of the mismatch in terms of matchups on the court where he wasn't always the main focus of the opponent's defense, where he kind of was able to fade into the background a little bit more and LeBron was able just to dish off some assists to him and drive to the basket then. So I think that's just an example of kind of what makes LeBron James a special player he is, where he allows the players around him to kind of step up because they're not being, you know, covered as intently.
And he said in one of his speeches, he said that he wants respect from people, that he feels like everything he's done throughout his entire NBA career, that he deserves respect from people. And it also is starting to bring up the GOAT debate. Who's better, Michael Jordan or LeBron James? And some people are saying, oh, it's LeBron now because he's got that fourth title. But some people are like, no, no, no. Jordan was 6 for 6. He's still the GOAT.
There's this awesome guy on YouTube, and I've watched these videos. He made a series. His name is Clayton Crowley, and he made a series about he's making the argument for 8 players who have a claim to the throne in basketball as the GOAT. And it's super interesting, and he broke down LeBron just a couple weeks ago. That was the last one. He talked about how a lot of the LeBron detractors will point at, you know, he's 4 and 6 in the finals. And the history of losing in the finals is really what hurts his legacy a lot. And, just some other notions that people have about him. But I don't think anybody disrespects LeBron and like his greatness. And I think especially for us, you know, we never got to see Michael Jordan play. And even when, you know, Kobe Bryant was in the league and other mid-2000 greats like Allen Iverson, guys like that, LeBron is like the first truly great player that we've been able to watch. And so I think that especially with the younger generation, I don't think there's a whole lack of respect there, especially or even where we're sitting, the three of us. I think we can all agree that LeBron will have a lasting legacy, whether or not, you know, 5 years, 10 years from now, he is considered the greatest to ever hit the court.
I think the whole comparing like two different players, who's the GOAT, it's such a hard thing to do because they played in different times. Like the whole landscape of professional basketball was different when Jordan played. I think it's just got to sit back and just be glad that we have somebody like that to watch and appreciate their greatness. And yes, you can make the tracks from Jordan, LeBron's argument that he lost in so many finals, but you go back and think about those Cavs-Warriors battles. Those were some all-time great finals matchups. So just it makes me kind of realize how lucky we were to get to see that for so long. Well, 4 years in a row we had that matchup, and that's maybe something I wish I could have gone back and realized how unique it was, how this doesn't always happen where you get a really great team going against one of the best players ever. I wish I could have watched those with that lens now and realized that that's pretty special and kind of appreciate it more because now – as we're getting to LeBron at age 35, I wish I could have, you know, maybe because again, when he was with the Cavs and with the Heat, I was rooting against him because he was always just beating the Bulls. I didn't want to see him succeed because he was hurting my team. But now that I'm older and a little more mature, I realize that this is pretty unique what he's doing. And I wish I did appreciate it more in the early stages of his career.
Leo Stoddard with the wisdom that comes at 20 years old.
21 now.
Yes, congratulations. Ooh. I forgot about that. We had a special birthday between shows. Very own Leo Stoddard turned 21. Unfortunately, couldn't go out and celebrate, but I hope it was a good day. But I absolutely agree that we really took it for granted, and I think that's something that people are going to say, especially as LeBron approaches these later years of his career where he might lose some effectiveness here in the next couple of years, is we really took his level of prestige for granted. And we were really getting to watch one of the best players to ever play, certainly the best player to ever play in our lifetime, unless you count MJ with the Wizards. But
we don't talk about
we don't talk about MJ with the Wizards. But I think that that's something that has really gotten lost because we've become so fatigued with all of constantly seeing LeBron in the finals. And it wears a little bit on you, but I'm sure this is how people felt in the 90s who weren't Bulls fans.
Right,
Like, God bless America, it's Michael Jordan again, and he's going to beat the living hell out of whoever he's playing, and that's just how it's going to go. And that's kind of what it's been like for LeBron. And I think in a couple years after he's done and he's called it quits, then we're really going to realize, wow, we're watching something special.
Right, well, and I feel like LeBron was kind of made a villain for leaving Cleveland the first time around. Like, people say, like, Jordan would have never done that. But Jordan didn't have to do that because he landed in a great situation with, despite what they said about him in The Last Dance, he had a pretty good GM with Jerry Krause, who surrounded him with good talent. He had a good coach in Phil Jackson. Like, he had no reason to leave the Bulls. LeBron, first time around in Cleveland, had nothing to work with. So he went and played in a much better situation in Miami with better players. And that kind of helped build up his legacy because he was finally able to get that ring. And then the fact that he went back to Cleveland and won that ring, I think it kind of dispels the whole villain narrative because he did still honor that franchise to an extent.
And you mentioned it a little bit, Joey, and you too, Leo, with all the championships, but you're saying he might call it quits in a couple of years, but there's some times where he's been saying that he wants to keep playing as long as he can and that he'll – like, he wants to be in the league so he can play against his son when his kids grow up.
And there's something to be said for that, too. I mean, with – the way he trains, too, like, he's a freak with that regard. Like, to make another Jordan comparison, he's not like Michael Jordan where, you know, he's smoking cigars and going, like, maybe not living as lavishly as Jordan was. Like, LeBron, like, he trains all offseason, goes super hard. So he's 35, but he's in better shape than probably we all are at 21, 22.
I think that's very fair that to say that LeBron James is in better shape than I am. I think that's very accurate. And, Leo, just real quick, you said that he never had anybody on those first Cavs teams. Let's not glance over the greatness that was Anderson Varejão.
oh, I'm sorry.
All-time name. But yeah, you're absolutely right, talking about how he could feasibly play for another 5 years and still be super productive. Like, we saw Vince Carter, who I think we can all agree is not the player that LeBron James is, who played into his 40s. And he was still able to have a bench role and still be pretty productive. And I think LeBron James looks a lot better than Vince Carter did at 35. And so I think it's feasible that we see him go up against Bronny Jr. And I think that would be an awesome matchup. That'd be a real welcome to the league kid kind of moment when your dad, like, posterized you. That would be awful.
Because, you know, yeah, LeBron would still go just as hard on his own son. Like,
oh, he'd probably be harder.
Yeah, without doubt. His son would probably be going up trying to, like, go for a dunk, and then, like James did in the finals, just smack it down and be like, no, son.
Block on Bronny?
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
Throw in the shades of the 90s Pistons on him and just clothesline him.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get me started about the bad boys. I'll go on for hours.
What if, like, crazy scenario – what if they played on the same team somehow?
I mean, honestly,
junior and senior dynamic.
I bet LeBron has enough pull around the league that if he wanted to go where Bronny got drafted, he could make that happen.
Oh yeah.
To live out his twilight, especially if Bronny went to Cleveland. Can you imagine?
Yeah, we all know the draft lottery is rigged, so like they could find a way to rig it.
You need the storylines, like junior. Like LaMelo Ball is obviously going to go to the Lakers. Even though they just won the title, they're going to somehow win the lottery. It's kind of like, you know,
Golden State has the second pick, but still, I think he's going to end up there just because they want the Warriors to be good again.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, how the NHL draft lottery worked, where they had the one slot for the playoff team this year. That's they're just going to swap the Lakers into the number one pick.
Of course, yeah.
Just so you know, they can keep up the prestige.
Yeah, you were saying about it. That they had the lottery, and there were a bunch of other teams that were feeling confident they'd get the number one overall pick. Then the Rangers got eliminated in the qualifiers. All of a sudden, they're in the lottery. They get the number one overall pick, and they're like, wow, lottery's rigged.
Yeah, and that I wish we were talking hockey so I could go in on that right now and how mad I am at the Rangers for taking our time, Panera, but it's fine. It's
fine. If we're going to talk about lotteries being rigged, like, it did work out in favor of the Bulls. That's how they got Derrick Rose, so
There we go. But we can save the NHL talk for another day.
For sure. That will just about wrap it up, not only for the NBA season, but for this segment as well. We will take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk some college hoops. You're listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
All right, Jessica, this is Howard, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to The Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. As we mentioned, we are recording this prior, so on Wednesday night. But earlier on Wednesday in the morning, in the afternoon, Redbird men's and women's basketball finally kicked off their season with their first official practice at Redbird Arena. Things were obviously a bit different for them, but it's nice to see that things are starting to get back to normal and they are trying to adapt to it so they can get ready come the start of the season.
And I'm really glad we're talking about Redbirds basketball again, because we talked about them a little bit earlier in the semester, but we weren't able to completely flesh out what we thought was going to happen in the season. We also didn't know exactly what the teams were going to look like, because football had a lot of unexpected transfers. So I'm glad that we finally have a solid understanding of what the roster is going to look like and what the coaching staff is going to look like as we head into this semi-modified season.
Now, I'm doing that typical meatball sports fan thing where I had really low expectations for the Redbirds, but now the more and more I'm thinking about it, I'm starting to talk myself into it. Like, this team could be better than they were last year. They got a lot of returning starters. They had some elements of their game that were kind of a little hope-inspiring last year. So now I'm going full-blown meatball, where I think the Redbirds could be one of the top teams in the Valley if a lot of things go right for them.
And I'm really excited, because we'll get to the women's team, because I think there's a general consensus that they're going to perform better in the MVC than the men. But I don't know. The men, that's a super interesting bunch. Because in the past, it's no secret that Coach Mueller has gotten criticized for not having the reins on the team and the team chemistry kind of being lacking. But now it's kind of a fresh slate of guys, either young guys, sophomores that we saw last year, or transfers coming in. But this is something we talked about last time. There's not really a defined go-to guy. And so I think that's going to be super interesting as we move forward, because there's no, Phil Fain to dump the ball into every time. It's kind of a new start and maybe a different approach for Coach Mueller, and something that can yield a little more success rather than the postseason disappointments that we've become accustomed to.
I think maybe that could result in them having to rely more on the team than the individuals, where they have some good pieces. Like, they have DJ Horn, they have Antonio Reeves, Abdu Jai. But maybe not one of those guys can become the true number one, like a Malik Yarbrough type. But if they could all just play well within the constraints of the system and rise to the occasion on any given night, that could really help the Redbirds. If you have 2-3 players that you can count on to score 15 to 20 points and just be a consistent team, which they weren't last year, where the scoring was just so streaky.
And we look at some of the guys, like you were mentioning, with those freshmen that we saw, Antonio Reeves and DJ Horn, they've been some of the guys that have been able to step up. But like you said, there isn't really going to be that go-to player this year. Like last season, it was Zach Copeland who was the guy trying to get the baskets. So it'll be interesting to see who's going to try and fill that role. But I think maybe as time goes on with Reeves or Horn, give them some time, and maybe come their senior year, they could be that deadly dynamic duo that could help propel them into the postseason. But again, they want to get into the postseason as soon as they can.
And that's a great point, is a lot of these guys are really, really young. And so they have 3 or 4 years to really build a lot of chemistry and find out what works for them. So I think that it may take time. And a lot of people have been calling for a change in the coaching staff, somebody to take over the new roster. But I don't know, seeing what Dan Mueller has done in the past with other rosters, it gives me a lot of hope that with these kind of moldable guys that they can fit into the system that Dan Mueller has, and we've seen be successful before. Maybe they don't have a true big man this year like they have in years past, but I guess, that's the future of basketball, is perimeter shooting. So I think with a good system, they could really become a team that can compete. And we saw a lot of really good flashes last year, especially on the defensive end. The Redbirds were super solid defensively last year and had a couple guys really stand out for them. So maybe building on that, and if you can stop the other team from scoring, that really increases your chances of winning. So that's I just hope that they can continue to build on that and get a little more offensive presence going.
Yeah, and that I don't have the exact stat pulled up, but there was at one point in the season last year, the Redbirds were one of the top defenses, and I'm not sure which the Valley or the Nation, but they were very good at forcing teams to get shot clock expirations where they weren't able to get shots and allow teams to drive to the basket. They were just forcing teams to cycle the ball around and not get any offense generated. So that's a really encouraging starting point for this team. You have the defense down. And with young basketball players, I feel like that's always the key, is getting the defense first and the offense will come eventually. So now that we've seen that Horn and Reeves and the other younger underclassmen can play the defensive system well, now we can maybe hope that if they take strides in the offensive side of the court, that this team could be a more complete unit. Because we saw last year with the team, when their three-point shooting was on, they were a very good offense. But it was just so inconsistent all year, and that when the three-point ball wasn't there, they kind of just weren't sure what to do. And so if this offense could look more complete this year, I really do think it could be a lot more encouraging than what we saw last year.
And I think one of the things the offense could try and improve on, and we saw them struggle a lot with it last year, is trying to take care of the ball. We've seen, I was looking at the stat earlier today, they averaged just over 14 turnovers per game. It was 14.4 turnovers per game. So really, they really need to take care of the ball. They've done it on the other side, as you mentioned, Leo, defensively, taking teams deep into the shot clock to try and get them to turn over, but it's the turnovers on offense that have really been costing them some of the games, because then the offense can get it on a fast break and convert that into two, sometimes 3 points.
And I think one of the things that's really going to help the Birds avoid those really costly turnovers in the offensive zone this year is the fact that there's not the one go-to guy. And I know I keep saying it, but when the Redbirds got down to the other side of the court last year, it was almost a given that they were going to try to get the ball to Zach Copeland. And so defenses could really key in on that, whether they were playing man or zone. They could have an extra guy floating in the area of Zach Copeland looking to get that turnover and switch that momentum. But now with not a standout guy, but a nice diverse group of guys who can all kind of contribute, it's the Redbirds offense, I think, is going to be less predictable, which I think will hopefully limit those turnovers, as long as they're not doing anything dumb and making sloppy passes.
Right. And I really think that we've been harping on this, that not having that go-to guy can kind of help the players, the young guys, that they don't have some senior they can defer to and constantly rely on to make the big shot, that it's going to force Horn and Reeves to maybe step up when the moment calls them, and that they can grow into that role and hopefully, yeah, just become more responsible and understand that we don't have somebody that's going to get everything done for us. We have to kind of take matters into our own hands though.
And now turning things over just a little bit, because we want to try and talk about both sides. So the men's team, as we talked about, struggling a little bit. Hopefully they can turn things around this year. They only had 10 wins last year, so hopefully they can get some more wins. But then again, it's an unpredictable schedule. There could be games canceled because of COVID concerns. But meanwhile, on the other side, the women's basketball team was looking really promising. And Leo, we've talked about it before. You guys were getting ready to cover hoops in the Heartland, and that was going to be really exciting given the way that the team performed heading up going into the QC. And for the pandemic to kind of shut that down, I think this team might come out stronger than ever and like hungry to try and return to the postseason.
Absolutely. Like their star was heading in the perfect direction when this pandemic happened. They had just upset, I think they were number 21 at the time, Missouri State. They beat Loyola in a very competitive game. Everything was going right for the Redbird women's basketball team. They were the favorite heading into the hoops in the Heartland, and it didn't get to happen. So I think that's going to put an extra chip on their shoulder, because now really looking at the roster, they're still bringing back a lot of the key contributors from last year's team. Well, they have experience of playing in some very competitive games against tough opponents. So I think they're going to bring a more composed roster to the court next year, since they do have that experience. And now it's going to be a different outlook, though, because now the Valley expects the Redbirds to be good. So now we'll see how do they perform with that expectation.
And there's a big missing piece. You talked about a lot of the players coming back, but Lexi Wallen not coming back. She put up 17.5 points a game for the Birds last year, which was incredible. And especially coming, you know, she was a volleyball player here for 4 years. And then when she ran out of eligibility, she was still in grad school. So she decided, hey, let's give basketball a shot. She played in high school. And she came out of nowhere and became the top scorer, an immediate contributor in that offense. And that was what made this Redbirds women's team so potent, was their ability to score every time they went down the court. And obviously they've still got some great contributors. TT Madgett is somebody that we talked about so much last year. She was so good for the Birds. She was second on the team in points. And so she's probably going to be running this offense this year. And so I really think that they can fill that hole. They've got Lexi Kudelka, who we saw take a lot of minutes for Lexi Wallen last year. And so with her kind of stepping up into that role, playing in the paint, I don't think there's going to be too much of a learning curve there, because they play a very similar way. And I think that this team is going to pick up right where they left off. They are still mostly the same unit, super cohesive. Kristen Gillespie is an amazing coach, and I'm just so excited to see the Redbirds women's team hopefully get to play in Hoops in the Heartland this year, because they got a little robbed last year.
Absolutely. And Kristen Gillespie, I mean, her coaching effort really kind of has been very impressive too, because she developed such a deep group last year where they could that's how they were able to compete with all these top teams in the Valley, was because they could go 3-4 girls deep on their bench. And that's such a – so they lost Wallen, but then they're going to have some players that were playing meaningful minutes in complementary roles last year that can maybe step in and get a starting spot. And that's huge for any team in college basketball, is just having a deep roster. And the Redbirds certainly do. Like, this is their time to strike. Like, things are aligning perfectly for the women's team, and they, I think, are going to have – hopefully a lot of expectations, but I think they can handle the pressure that comes with those expectations.
And you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, but hopefully we'll get to go watch some NCAA tournament ball and get to call those games in the spring if they live up to that potential. Might be looking at a little red zone road trip. Wow, that was tough to say. But that would be fun, getting to call some true tournament games.
Yeah, definitely. A little bit of low alliteration. But one thing you brought up is TT Madgett. Just looking at the roster, she actually graduated last year, so she's not on the team anymore.
Oh, my God, no.
So
That's tough. That's tough.
It's going to be a big Juju Redmond.
Yeah, they still Juju Redmond.
She was one of their key contributors last year and really took on a bigger role as the season went. I believe she was a junior college transfer. So that was her first year with the Redbirds. And now in year two, now that she's gotten that exposure to Division I basketball, I think she could really step in and have a bigger role.
And I really do forget that Missouri Valley Conference, a newcomer does not mean freshman. When you said that, I was like, she won newcomer like 2 years ago. How has she graduated already? But that makes a lot of sense that she transferred in. So that is tough for the Birds. But regardless, they still have, like Leo said, so much depth on the bench that I don't think it'll be an issue losing a couple of key contributors.
I think so. You look at the forward spot that Wallen had. The other Lexi Kudelka, stepped in here and there trying to fill that role and trying to be a presence inside the paint. So if she can step up as she gets more playing time, so they can try – get the ball to her or draw the foul. Mary Crompton as well, really haven't seen her the first couple of seasons, mainly because injuries have gotten in the way, but she's someone we've seen in Hoop Fest. Sadly, they won't have Hoop Fest this year, but she was a really good three-point shooter, and that was something the Redbirds, not really their specialty. So if they can get her going from deep and she can stay healthy, it can definitely bring the Birds one step ahead of everyone else. And while talking about that, that'll bring us to our red zone question of the week. The Redbirds were projected in the MVC preseason poll to finish fifth. So we're asking you for our question of the week. How do you think they're going to perform this season? As I said, they were predicted to finish fifth. Will they overperform and finish higher than that? Will they meet expectations and finish fifth? Or will they underperform, finish below that? We will have to see. But that'll just about do it. When we come back, we will be live in the studio with Jack Grau from the news and sports department to talk about some football on the gridiron. You're listening to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
By FEMA and the Ad Council.
This is Brady Davis from Redbird Football, and you're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. We are finally live in the studio after pre-recording those two segments, and we are pleased to be joined by Jack Grau from the News and Sports Department, making his debut on Red Zone.
Good. It feels great to be in here today.
And as we mention every week, it's a tradition that the news and sports guest brings on a topic of their choosing, and fittingly, being a Bears fan, you want to talk about how the Bears have been doing so far through 5 weeks of the NFL season.
Yes, yes we are. I'm feeling really good about the Bears this season. We're 4-1. I'm feeling very confident about how Nick Foles has been performing, especially after the Bucks. We've, you know, it's been very, you know, close calls most games, every game that we have won so far. But to me, that just makes it more fun to watch, and I really am feeling confident for us going forward into the season. And I'm very, very excited to see us go against Carolina this weekend.
I guess I'm just the opposite of that, Jack, where this roller coaster season the Bears have had has just been just horrible for me to watch, where just every game I'm living and dying, like, not sure if they're going to be able to pull it out. Like, it hasn't always been fun. It's more fun after the win, but sometimes the way they get to that win is just so frustrating to watch that it is a grind to get through some of these games.
I can definitely see where you're coming from with that. But I feel like, you know, not really having it together and then turning it around at the last second, that's how I get through most things in life. And to watch my favorite sports team get their wins that way, that I like that a lot. But that's just me.
Yeah, just the way they've been playing this season, as we mentioned, they're 4-1. But a lot of people are criticizing them because they're not really a strong 4-1 team, because they're just getting a bunch of lucky wins. And I think that's mainly because the offense isn't really scoring and being as consistent the way they should be.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're having a fairly good time right now, but the tables may turn when, you know, we get to teams like the Chiefs, when we get to, you know, other teams that have been, you know, to the Super Bowl more than we have. That being said, we did defeat a team that had both Tom Brady and Gronkowski on it. So, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, Super Bowl-like competition, that's about, you know, as good as it gets right there, if we're talking about that.
Yeah, and I definitely think that was a confidence-inspiring win for the Bears, you know, because they haven't looked too legit in the first five games. Their point differential is only plus five. Yeah. But this does feel like a new team we've been seeing in the past couple weeks, that they're really coming into their own. And last Thursday, it really did feel like the defense stepped up and basically won that game for the Bears.
Oh, yeah.
That we saw Khalil Mack transcend to that next level. And that's kind of what this team needs. If where the offense is going to be struggling or not be as potent as other offenses around the league, that you need that defense to just almost play at a perfect game. And they need those turnovers and a lot of those lucky breaks that the defense was getting in 2018 that was able to pick up some of the slack the offense wasn't providing.
I definitely agree. And, you know, for us playing the Bucks, you know, there was field goal after field goal after field goal for that game. Definitely. And so I definitely think that, you know, those players that are making those kicks, you know, are really going to be a crux for us. And, you know, you mentioned Khalil Mack. There's never a time that Khalil Mack is on the field that I'm not having a great time watching him. A player that always keeps me on my toes with the Bears is Lucas Graham, honestly, because I think that player, he's either making really, really great plays or plays that, you know, my head's in my hands. I'm like, come on, man. But, you know, that's another player that really keeps me on my feet. I think that we are in the beginning of Nick Foles era Bears. I really do think we are. You know, when we were playing the Indy Colts, the performance there was, you know, that's something I'm not proud of, especially on Foles' part, but I would like to think that that is, you know, just the beginner nerves of, you know, starting for a new team for the very first time. I'm looking forward to where we're going to be this season. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think the thing with Foles is that he's a short-term fix, and he's not going to be a long-term answer at the quarterback position. But this team is in their championship window right now. Core players are in their prime, so you may not need a long-term answer at quarterback. That if Foles can get them through this season, that might be just enough. But it is just frustrating thinking that we probably are going to have to go through this same song and dance again in the offseason, thinking about who's going to be the quarterback. Do we try Mitch again? Do we keep Foles around, or do you go look for another option?
Yeah,
so and a lot of feel like the same thing the Bears have been doing for, you know, the better part of since 1985, really, that they've been searching for that franchise quarterback.
Exactly, and a lot of people were kind of criticizing Foles because this is his first season on the team, and he hasn't been as great as he was when he was with the Eagles, but then they're saying that he doesn't know the offense as well as Trubisky does, but it's going to have to take time. I mean, look at Tom Brady. Yes, he is a great quarterback, but he had to adjust to a completely new skill set because he was used to Bill Belichick and running that kind of offense, and now he has to come in to the NFC now, in the NFC South, and see how Bruce Arians runs it with the different guys that they have, see how Ronald Jones can run the ball, Scotty Miller, and then they bring in Gronkowski, Chris Godwin, and Mike Evans were kind of their go-to, so really trying to adjust to that. So, I mean, it can be done.
Yeah, and Leo, I appreciate what you said earlier about the Bears players being in one of the best positions that they can be. I think one of the biggest differences this season is going to have from 2019 is that I think Matt Nagy has a lot better choices and players to work with this year. I think that that's going to make his job a lot easier.
Yeah, I think they have done some pretty good upgrades to the defensive side. I think adding Robert Quinn to that D-line, it takes some of the pressure off Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks, where now there's another threat at the opposite side of the line. Just what frustrates me about the Bears is that it feels like Ryan Pace is very good at identifying difference makers on the defensive side of the ball, but they didn't really add enough offensively, where it feels like outside of Allen Robinson, they lack another good veteran receiver to throw to.
Yeah,
and now with Tariq Cohen going down with injury, that they haven't been able to fill that void in the running game either.
Yeah, and Allen Robinson, I'm pretty sure, has requested a switch to another team, and he's taken the Bears out of his Twitter profile. I'm very interested to see what the Bears locker room really looks like right
that
now.
That just feels like typical Bears, where you have one of the top receivers in the league, and you just make him so angry that he wants nothing to do with your franchise. Like, great job there by the Bears.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's like this better management, and then trying to get with the running game situation. A lot of people wanted to try and get Le'Veon Bell to come to our team since we, as you mentioned, Tariq Cohen got injured and Montgomery, a newer running back in the league, trying to be a standout guy in the offense, which he has been. But now Bell is expected, according to ESPN, to sign with the Chiefs.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that the Bears will always be kicking themselves for is passing up an opportunity to draft Pat Mahomes. I think that we will always be kicking ourselves for that.
Yeah, a lot of people were like, okay, we went second overall, trade up to get that pick, and then we get Trubisky. We're like, okay. And then we see how the rest of them played out, like Mahomes and Watson, and we should have picked them. And we've seen on social media, Watson was like, yeah, the Bears never even talked to me.
Yeah.
Let alone reached out to me before the draft.
Vision. We have to have that vision when we're looking at players that we want to get, you know? But the thing about Trubisky, you know, I would like to say that maybe we just had a rough year last year and I would be willing to give the guy another chance. God forbid something happened to Foles and Mitch comes back in. But, I mean, it's just going to be, you know, how the cookie crumbles, I guess.
It just feels so typical Bears, though, where they've had so many opportunities to maybe solidify their stance in the quarterback position, where even this offseason they they had negotiated with Teddy Bridgewater and were close to finalizing that deal, but then they couldn't guarantee him the starting spot. And so now they're going to have to play against Bridgewater this weekend, where he would probably be an upgrade over what Foles brings to the table. And that's going to be what the Bears are going to have to deal with all year, no matter how good the defense is, no matter how good Allen Robinson is. I really think it is the quarterback play that's going to be holding them back to an extent where they're going to get passable play in Foles, but they're not going to get that next-tier quarterback play that could maybe win them some playoff games.
Yeah, that was a big, you know, Bridgewater was, you know, a big reason in picking, you know, the Bears over Carolina. I think if we can beat Tom Brady, we can beat Bridgewater. And there were rumors over the summer, I believe, of the Bears looking at picking up Peyton Manning as a coach, which, you know, that would have been incredible to see him on our roster. I would have loved that. I think he would have done, you know, a lot of really, really great things if we could get him in as one of our coaches.
And speaking of coaches, I really think one of the bolder moves the Bears made was getting rid of their defensive coordinator, Vic Fangio.
Yeah.
Because in 2018, we were basically unstoppable on offense when we brought in Khalil Mack, and then when we got in the playoffs, it wasn't, they didn't perform up to expectations, but then we got rid of him, and then the defense just wasn't the same.
It wasn't that they fired Fangio. It was that he, because he had done so well as a coordinator, he got offered that head coaching position with Denver, which, you know, you only really get so many shots to be a head coach in the NFL,
right,
especially as a career coordinator like Fangio. So he almost had to take that opportunity. So, but the way Denver is performing, maybe he might be available this offseason. You never know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy, crazy stuff, man.
I know. And just looking at the remainder of the Bears' schedule, as we mentioned, we're heading into Week 6, and they've only played one divisional opponent, and that was the Lions to open up the season. They're not even playing the Packers until the week of Thanksgiving, or like that
That's
Sunday
like,
on
what,
the 29th.
Week 11, Week 12, something like that? And, you know, talking about our, you know, win against the Lions, all of our wins have, like, come around and gotten turned around in the third and fourth quarter, which, you know, is interesting to say, but, you know, it does make you wonder when you consider the teams that we turned it around against in the third and fourth quarter, like the Lions, like the Falcons. You know, that's just something to think about, I guess. But I think Carolina is going to be a very, very fun game. Remind me who we're seeing after Carolina.
We're going to take on the L.A. Rams in Los Angeles.
I can't speak a whole lot as to what, you know, playing the Rams is going to be like. They're not a team that I pay very close attention to. But, you know, the Rams, you know, they'll have their home field advantage. They'll have that going for them. So regardless, you know, of course I'm going to say Bears for that. That's just how I roll, you know?
Yeah, being a fan, just ride or die with the Bears.
Yes,
we're,
sir.
Yeah, we're taking on the rest of the NFC South. So we got Drew Brees coming up at some point.
Yeah.
And then in the AFC, we're taking on that division with the Colts. So we're going to take on Deshaun Watson. And despite their team struggles, Deshaun Watson is being pretty strong at quarterback. I guess let's just be glad we're not taking on the NFC West and Russell Wilson.
Yeah, that's going to be a godsend, absolutely.
And, well, that looks like that'll just about do it. We'll see how the Bears do on Sunday against the Carolina Panthers. You want to know who we're picking? You got to stay tuned, because when we come back, it'll be the best segment in Sports Talk Radio with the Pick 6. You're listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. Welcome back to The Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. It is about that time. We're almost done with the show, but it is the Pick 6. Now, before we get started, just a quick debriefing of how the rules work. We basically choose 6 NFL games, and we basically just pick the winners of them. Looking at the standings, it is Joey Dwyer, who couldn't be here with us today. He's up top, 21-9 on the season. And then in second place, it is Leo, 20-10. Leo, how are you feeling second place?
Not too good, because it was that fateful Bears-Bucks game that broke the tie between myself and Joey. So if I had stayed loyal to my home team and picked the Bears, we'd still be locked in first place. But you know what? A lot can change in a week. So I hope that this will be a better week for me.
Yeah, hopefully. My aunt called me out, too, on that. had the Buccaneers, and then Friday morning she's like, "Hey, so how do you feel picking against our Bears?" I'm like, "Wow."
Not my
proudest aunt
moment.
Even called me out.
Yeah, that was tough.
Then Steve and I are tied for third, 18 and 12. One of us really trying to break through to take sole possession of third, and then the guest is in last place as usual, but they're 15 and 15, which is the best they've been all season.
Yeah, Joe Kennedy did some heavy lifting to get the guests back to 500. Hopefully Jack can build off that and get them back in the hunt a little bit.
Hopefully, yeah, he went 4-2 this week. So without further ado, let's get into our picks. First game is going to be the Chicago Bears against the Carolina Panthers. Made the mistake of choosing against the Bears last week. It bit me, so I'm going with the Bears.
Yeah, I also am going to go with the Bears here, but I don't think it's going to be a close game at all. I think this has all the makings of a trap game for the Bears, where they might be facing a team that they underestimate, because Teddy Bridgewater has been pretty good for the Panthers, and former Bear Mike Davis has been going off this year out of nowhere. So I think this is going to be a tougher game than the Bears might have expected, but I still think they're going to get the win because they are riding pretty high right now.
Alrighty. Steve is going with Chicago. Joey's going with Chicago, and the guest is going with Chicago. So a clean sweep of the Bears to get the win on the road. This next one is going to be a big one, a divisional matchup between the Cleveland Browns and the undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh was able to get the win last week. This is tough. Someone was telling me Cleveland, but I feel like just the way Pittsburgh is playing, they're undefeated. I'm going to pick them until they prove me otherwise, so I'm going Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I really like the Steelers here. I think they have a very good defense and a lot of playmakers on offense. When I was doing my research for this game, I came across a pretty wild stat, actually. So this game's being played at Cleveland, and so the Browns won at home last week. So that moved Baker Mayfield, now of active NFL quarterbacks, has the highest winning percentage in that stadium. But do you know who he passed up to get the highest win percentage at Cleveland? Ben
Who's
Roethlisberger,
that?
The quarterback for the Steelers. Just because there's been such turnover in the Cleveland Browns quarterback room, that Big Ben, an opposing quarterback, actually fared the best in that stadium, which is pretty ridiculous. And I think that he's going to keep that trend going and get the win this Sunday.
So Leo's choosing Pittsburgh. Joey's going with Cleveland. And so are Steve and the guest. So we'll see how it goes. Baker Mayfield is questionable. Chances are he's probably going to play. This next game, I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. It is the undefeated, red-hot Green Bay Packers against TB, Tom Brady, and Tampa Bay. Both of these, as I mentioned, it's probably going to be a high-scoring game. Maybe close to 100 points, potentially, the way both of these guys throw and try and find the end zone. But I think the way Green Bay is going, they're going to get the win.
Yeah, I really think Green Bay might be the best team in the NFC, as much as I hate saying that this year. And I'm just going to keep picking with them here, because I think the Bears, I think, pointed out a lot of flaws in Tampa Bay's game. So I think the Packers then should be able to exploit those to an even higher degree.
Joey is also going with Green Bay. The guest is going with Green Bay. Steve, the outlier, he thinks Tom Brady is going to bring them home and try and get the win. And they're playing in Tampa Bay.
It should be interesting. And, you know, I'll take it, though, because this might be the last time we get to see Rodgers versus Brady in the NFL.
Yeah, this will be a big matchup. Too bad it's not a divisional matchup. That would be something, playing them twice a year. But, I mean, we get Breeze and Brady twice a year, so can't really complain. Interesting enough, there's no Thursday night football game, so we move to Sunday night football. It is going to be the Los Angeles Rams against the San Francisco 49ers. Now, I would typically pick the 49ers, but the way they even played last week, they were just banged up when Garoppolo came back in. Their running game has been probably their best thing, and just the way they've been struggling, can't really find a way to get things going. Yeah, the Rams aren't too much of it too, but I think LA is going to get the win on the road.
Yeah, I got to go with the Rams here. We typically see the team that loses in the championship does kind of deal with some sort of a hangover the year after, but it seems to have just been escalated even more for the 49ers, for they've really been depleted by injury, and they even pulled Jimmy Garoppolo last week, so I really just have to go with the Rams here because they're a more coherent team right now.
It is going to be another sweep as Joey, Steve, and the guest are all taking Los Angeles Well, it's going to be a California game, so can't really complain there. The next up, we got two games going on Monday. We got a Monday afternoon game. It is the Kansas City Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills. Chiefs are coming in with one loss. Same thing with the Bills. It's intriguing the Bills have come this far, given the way they've been going. Josh Allen really helping them out. But I think the defending champions, Patrick Mahomes, what he's been doing, and they also might have Le'Veon Bell if he's going to be ready to play on Sunday. I think regardless of that, though, the way the Chiefs have the red-hot offense, I think KC's coming out with it.
Yeah, the Chiefs were handed their first loss of the season last week against the Raiders, but I think that's going to kind of inspire them to play even better this weekend, because we do really see with this Andy Reid, Pat Mahomes dynamic, when they do lose, they come back even better. So I think they're going to hand Buffalo their second consecutive loss this week.
Joey is taking Buffalo. Steve's going to take Buffalo, but the guest Jack is going to ride with us on the Kansas City Chiefs. Then we get to the final game, Monday Night Football. It is going to be the Arizona Cardinals against the Dallas Cowboys. And this, it hurts me to pick this game because I have Dak Prescott on my fantasy team, and the injury that he suffered, I mean, I was almost in tears because he was my top-tier quarterback on that team, and for him to go down. But the way not only the fans of the Cowboys, but everyone else in the league have just rallied around to give him the support. He posted a video on Instagram. Like, it's amazing the amount of support that he's had. So best wishes to him for a successful recovery. Dalton, he was able to still get the win with them, but I feel he's not going to be as top tier as Prescott is. So I think the way Kyler Murray's been able to run the offense, I think Arizona's going to win it.
Yeah, which is how banged up Dallas was before Prescott even went down, that he was basically doing, they needed him to throw for like 350 yards every week just to stay in these games, and now without him, I think it's going to get pretty ugly for the Cowboys, so I'm going to pick the Cardinals here.
Joey's going with the Cardinals, Steve going with the Cardinals, and finally the guest, he's going with the Dallas Cowboys, America's team.
All right.
But that will just about do it for this week's edition of the Red Zone Podcast. Just to recap what we talked about, open up the show, recapping the NBA season with the Los Angeles Lakers taking home their 17th championship in franchise history, LeBron James getting his fourth ring. Then we moved over to the college basketball side as Redbird men's and women's basketball had their first practices yesterday and seeing how they're going to perform this season, if it's going to be up to expectations compared to the poll. Then we brought on news and sports guest Jack Rowe to talk about the Chicago Bears, seeing how best this 4-1 team is going to go against Teddy Bridgewater and the Carolina Panthers. Then we finished off with the best segment in sports talk radio, the Pick Six. Maybe there will be some movement in the standings. We will have to see. If you missed any part of the show, you can go to WZND.com. It'll be on there shortly. Make sure to go to at WZND Sports on Twitter and follow us. And for everyone here at WZND, I'm Anthony Fredding saying so long. You've been listening to The Red Zone.
And other past episodes of The Red Zone. Again, download The Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And, of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6. Right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.